One item that seemed evil was a 1-inch cube-shaped object that looked like it was made of the stuff diamonds are made of and had a small sphere the size of a pearl suspended in its center. The sphere pulsated with every color in the rainbow. It was a beautiful sight to see, was a common utterance of those who gazed upon it. But its beauty hid its dastardly purpose. Unlike many of the other alien objects, only one function was identified for that object. When it was placed on the chest of a person, the sphere left the cube and penetrated the chest cavity and entered the lung. It could be administered from the front or the back of a person, but it would not discharge into anything but a living human lung. It left no puncture wound or any other sign of entry on the body. It was never determined whether the sphere had mass or if it was a ball of photons or some other form of matter or antimatter. After it completed its task, it reappeared back into the cube. The whole episode lasted only 60 seconds. Not enough time to study what exactly was taking place in the lung. Once it penetrated the lung, the whole body went into a state of transmutation. The sphere appeared to use the oxygen in the lungs to accelerate its function. Exactly 52 seconds after the injection, most of the body vaporized into a whiff of smoke. On one occasion, all that was left was a few external body parts, fingers and toes. Interestingly, the scientists who were there when this first happened were not injured in any way, even though they were a few inches away from the body. It was a horrifying sight and supposedly was only performed twice. They only did it a second time so they could see what was taking place in the body after the injection. Spontaneous combustion had been a mystery for many decades and still will be for the general population. The committee now knows that it was not spontaneous, but caused for a purpose. That purpose remains a mystery. The device did not have a triggering mechanism. The cube functioned like all the other items from the alien ship. It was self-directing, and kept most of its secrets secret. How did the object know not to penetrate the lung of one of the scientists? It probably would have if it were placed on their chest. The scientists learned from the mistakes of their colleagues. Never come into direct contact with any alien object. Clothing made from any material, as well as ordinary gloves, seems sufficient protection from many of alien instruments. To function, the alien instruments often needed to come into direct contact with exposed living skin. Certain alien objects only operated inside the alien craft. When those gadgets activated, they triggered a corresponding response on the ship. An opening might occur, revealing hidden rooms or small mysterious spaces. Some of the rooms contained futuristic-looking surgical tables and equipment. Others were dark, empty spaces or voids that resonated with mystifying sounds and vibrations. Few scientists ever entered those rooms, and the few who did were never able to put into words what they found inside them. Some doorways and openings inside the ship remain hidden and unknown. There is no hint to where these spaces are, except when by accident or coincidence a scientist happens to walk by the area where the hidden room is located while in possession of the triggering alien device. Such devices seemed to be internally coded to open certain rooms and freaky spaces. One hidden room that was discovered by accident revealed a small chamber with a single seat in it. The seat was molded to support a human form. There were no cushions on the seat. The seat was made of the same material as the ship, a soft metallic substance. The chamber had a glow to it that was hard to describe, but one technician said that it had a heavy feel. The color inside the chamber was yellow, and the air thick like jelly. The chamber was the scariest space discovered on the craft. Mentioned in the documents, it gave all who saw it the chills. None of the scientists studying the chamber dared sit in the seat. The chamber was not much bigger than a nook in the wall, with just enough room for one seat and space for an average-sized man. The scientists that were detailed to study the chamber submitted a request to the committee for a human guinea pig to place into the seat. They needed a living body to test a theory. They believed that once a person was placed into the chamber seat, the chamber would close, and only God knows what it will do to that person. How they came up with that theory wasn't mentioned. The unlucky victim who was placed into the chamber seat was a man in his 50s. He had no living family members or friends. He was a transient hit by a car. The search committee, which was in charge of procuring live human bodies for the scientists, found him through a network of government hospitals that were set up to provide that service. Hundreds of people with no known relatives end up in sanitariums every year, without anyone ever showing up to claim them. From that pool of the forgotten, the committee made use. The man procured for that experiment suffered massive injuries from the car accident. He was still alive but barely when the committee received him. Everything possible to save his life was done. When it was determined that he would die, his wounds were sutured and most of the bleeding was suppressed. He was delivered to the committee 2 hours after leaving the hospital and was placed into the chamber minutes after he arrived. The man could not sit up by himself and there were no straps to hold him in place. Apparently, none were needed. Once he was placed on the seat held him there as if he were a piece of metal in contact with a magnetic surface. Seconds after placing the injured man into the clutches of the alien seat, the remote unit that activated the opening of the chamber made an indescribable sound. The sound seemed to trigger the chamber to close. Once closed, the alien triggering device made other sounds and some kind of process in the chamber began. After a few minutes passed, no one really knows how long he was in there, but it didn't seem long, the remote device made more sounds and the chamber opened like a clam standing on its side. The man inside the chamber stood up and walked out of the nuke. There was no evidence of his wounds and his health appeared perfect. For an instant everyone there thought they had discovered the cure for all major injuries. But the euphoria was short-lived. As they watched the man, or what they had hoped would be a man, the man walked directly into another room in the craft. It was another mysteriously hidden room that revealed itself when the living human body approached it. They soon realized they were witnessing a nightmare and not a miracle. They watched the man walk past them without acknowledging any of them. The scientists could tell by the look in his eyes that something terrible had taken place. His eyes never wandered, but stared straight ahead as if he were a zombie. The room that he entered was much larger than the chamber that transformed him. The room was circular and had something similar to a bench seat that protruded from the curved walls. After the man entered the room, he sat on the bench and continued to stare with a blank expression towards the center of the room. The scientists tried speaking to the man but he did not respond, although his eyes blinked at normal intervals and his breathing was normal. He was operating on autopilot. Whoever was piloting the body before he was put into the nook either bailed out or was kicked out. In either case nobody was home. The body was given a complete physical and was found to be in perfect health. It wasn't until X-rayed him that they found something abnormal surrounding his internal organs, mainly the stomach, intestinal tract and his kidneys. Since the body did not eat or drink nor did it perform the normal bodily functions and still remained in top physical health, they surmised that the foreign object in the body was a kind of alien life support system. The alien organ kept the body alive, but what purpose could there be for a body with the lights out? The body stayed in that room for weeks, and then months. It did not age or deteriorate and remained in a dormant state, sitting upright, the whole time. The ship was like the fountain of youth. The scientists who worked in it felt like their aging mechanism was turned off. It was as if their biological clocks stopped and turned back when they entered the craft. Einstein's theory about time slowing down when mass approaches the speed of light did not apply because the craft was stationary, unless it took off and they were flying around the solar system without knowing it. The same week that they discovered the zombie machine, as it was called, they brainstormed on what purpose the body could have. Ideas ranging from using it to clean up the lab to working around nuclear waste sites were not taken seriously by the majority in the committee. They considered doing an autopsy on the body and removing the alien organ that was sustaining it, but orders from higher up told them not to tamper with it. They were told to monitor the body to see if it was being incubated by the craft for a purpose that they could not yet grasp. What they did understand was that everything about the alien craft was self-directed. It seemed that they were only the two observer and were allowed to participate on a limited basis. After a few years had passed and the body remained the same, the scientists were given permission by the committee to perform a few experiments with it. Headline: Alien Cover-Up. Concern over the increasing media inquiries and the public's persistence to know more about the alien cover-up, which snowballed in the late 70s, forced the military to clamp down and make it virtually impossible for leaks about extraterrestrial craft to happen. Every document and report that was not essential to the committee was destroyed. A new procedure was adopted for the documents that were kept. The chronological order of everything that happened, every event that took place, was coded and the time sequence scrambled. The committee was not allowed to keep records and documents for more than a week at a time. It didn't matter what they were working on or whether they felt it significant enough to carry a particular project into the next week. At the end of each week, every note, folder and all documentation was removed from the possession of the committee. The committee could request information it required of past experiments and projects and get access to them with little difficulty, but they could no longer keep their own files as they had in the past. Security was made tighter due to the changing times, specifically because of the new legislation that went into effect in the decade of the 70s, the Freedom of Information Act, which was adopted in 1966 and amended to allow more information to be accessed in 1974. Due in large part to the Nixon Watergate scandal. Those who worked on the committee or under its jurisdiction were not allowed to bring anything to work with them. Nor were they allowed to leave with anything, not even a pencil. All the things they would need while at work was provided to them. Personnel independent of the committee were the only ones allowed to remove and provide office supplies and other miscellaneous items to the committee and their staff. The committee was not allowed to shred or destroy anything. Their trash was taken and incinerated by those same people. Everyone associated with the committee had to pass through a screening room before they could enter their assigned work areas or leave them. They had to leave clothing and all personal belongings, wallets, purses, etc., in the locker rooms. They wore a special garb made of paper, and it was collected from them whenever they left the building and burned. Everyone who left the building had to go through a body check. Their bodies were checked to make sure no one made notes or sketches on them. If someone was inclined to take information out of the facility, they needed to have a photographic memory. But, for the nature of what they were studying, it was highly improbable that even that would work. As one scientist told a colleague, "Easier it would be to emerge from a tornado with a handful of sand than to grasp what was in our labs and still make any sense of it once we left the building." It was difficult enough to communicate with colleagues about alien stuff, let alone someone who had no idea of what they were dealing with. For those reasons, many of them questioned the need for the strong security measures they had to endure. How could they possibly go out and prattle about the things they had discovered, when they themselves didn't comprehend what they had in their possessions? When they went home after work, it was as if they emerged out of a dream state. They were forbidden to discuss their work with their spouses, and they didn't. Not for fear they will be found out, they had no doubt they would be, but for the fear that their loved ones would think them insane. Part of the contract they agreed to when they signed on for the job was that they would be kept under constant surveillance at work and at home. The surveillance technique was not unfamiliar to government personnel, especially those who were adept at working under high security clearances. One system used microwaves as a means of surveillance. The system worked by bouncing microwaves off window panes. The microwaves detected minute vibrations on the glass surface caused by talking and other noises. Most vibrations are so small they cannot be detected by the naked eye. It doesn't matter how many conversations are going on at the same time or other background noise in the room with them. A computer synthesized the vibrations and recreated any or all the conversations that took place. Stored in a computer's memory banks are the voice prints of everyone involved in the covert programs. With that information, the surveillance team can zero in on a particular member and listen to his or her conversation, whether they are in a car, office building, at home, or out on the town. In the weekly pep classes given by the committee to department heads, security was the main topic. At one of their meetings, a security officer from the CIA informed them that before the atom bomb was dropped on Japan, there were less than a dozen individuals in the world who understood the principles required to build that kind of device. To this day, few understand how nuclear particles can be manipulated to make a powerful explosive. Yet, the knowledge was leaked out, and in a short time many countries had nuclear capability. The CIA agent told the committee, "It is foolish to think that America is the only country to have an alien spacecraft in its possession." With that assumption, he told them, "It's plausible that the countries with alien knowledge, regardless of the extent of their extraterrestrial inventory, would use all their resources to acquire more of it." The fear that this information would fall into the hands of the general public was secondary. What the committee feared most was that a competing country would acquire that material. The general public was fed misinformation since the time the committee came into possession of the alien craft. This was done to confuse the public and at the same time make it more difficult for foreign agents to acquire reliable alien knowledge. Much of the misinformation about UFOs was leaked out by an agency that worked closely with the committee and not the committee. There was ambiguity in that area because those who controlled the direction of the committee members had given them specific instructions to withhold everything about the UFO phenomena from the public. And then they contradicted themselves when they gave orders to release certain true information via the underground for the purpose of misinformation. Some of the released material was accurate and truthful, but because of its bizarre nature, it was among the first to be denounced and rejected by the critics of the UFO phenomena. The campaign to discredit the entire civilian UFO research groups was funded on a small budget. The incredibility of beings from outer space or from other dimensions allowed the campaign to literally perpetuate itself and required little effort by the committee. Headline: Power of the Intangibles. Although there are thousands and possibly millions of people who believe without doubting the existence of extraterrestrials, there are millions who don't believe. Likewise, a large part of humanity does not believe in anything, especially if it can't be seen, tasted, or touched. Tangible things are what life is all about to the vast majority of humans. Cooks who talk about miracles and the nuts who see little green men with big eyes should be locked up. With prevailing public opinions such as those, the committee should not need to take many security measures at all. Comments found in a document. Security measures are primarily used to keep information from falling into the hands of agents from other governments. Governments who not only believe in the strange and unexplainable, but also spend large sums of money and time gathering up as much of that hokey-pokey stuff as they can get their hands on. Nations and people who are caught up in the tangible things of the world miss out on a whole lot of magic and mystery, the only real stuff in life. During the 1970s, committee members became hungry in their search for answers. Not necessarily because of increased demands from higher-ups, but from a strange and exasperating craving to learn more about extraterrestrials. It was a feeling all the members held jointly, as if they were on the brink of a major discovery concerning the craft. There was no hard evidence for the mass craze other than there were periods that no one wanted to go home at the end of the day. They were working themselves to death in the quest for more understanding of the alien mystic and only wanted more. In the meantime, vocal UFO groups persuaded a few in the media to put pressure on certain congressmen to shed light on the UFO cover-up. The wolf of disclosure was beating at the door. Would the door be kicked down before the committee was able to cull the pertinent information they needed or wanted from the craft? There was a lot of concern about the possibility of disclosure and them losing their edge. If the world found out about such projects and other secret projects, it would be over for them and perhaps mayhem for the country. However, they had little to fear. Some politicians did pound their fists and vowed to get to the bottom of that conspiracy, but only for show, to placate that small element of their UFO nut constituency. Normal Americans were uninterested in the UFO fantasy, as they believed it to be. Most politicians know there is a limit to the fruits of their inquiries and don't expect to get factual answers on certain topics, UFOs being one of those topics. They did manage to get the Air Force to release some files, albeit insignificant dummy files that were created specifically for that purpose. Politicians know, or should know, they are only receiving junk, but they don't care because it makes them look like they are trying to get to the truth. All democracies have limits, and the United States with the best version of democracy in the world will never reach the point where the common people have access to what goes on in government backrooms. Nevertheless, there is always a firebrand freshman from the House of Representatives or in the Senate who will come along and try to kick the door down, believing they will expose the conspiracy behind UFOs. But within a week or two, or perhaps a few months, like all the rest before them, they emerge with the proverbial tail between their legs, no longer looking for a fight and gladly taking the crumbs of deception that was thrown to them originally. There are things in the real world that the general population need not know about. Extraterrestrials is one of them. A quote from a memo that was sent anonymously to one senator who tried and failed to get information about the UFO conspiracy. The committee as a whole was painfully aware that they possessed secrets and knowledge that they and humanity were not ready to accept, and it was a real dilemma for most of them. Many involved with the program, if they had to do it over again, would not. Unfortunately, leaving the program was impossible, they knew too much. Ironically, if they were allowed to leave with no consequences for doing so, most would not. Leaving would not remove the knowledge of the aliens from their minds, and living a normal life with the things they knew was not possible. Their only link to sanity was their ability to be around other people like themselves who were stuck in the same predicament. Once a connection between the aliens and the human abductions was made, the committee was sure that it would unlock the secrets of human evolution, and perhaps a few other mysteries about the universe. The committee thought they were close to making that connection several times, but the aliens managed to elude them. The committee had given up chasing after UFOs and was anticipating that the aliens would somehow guide them to their next stage of discovery. They knew the aliens were watching them. They could feel their presence. There was suspicion in the ranks that someone on their team conspired with the aliens, or perhaps was an alien in human form and sitting in on their secret meetings. After the chamber on the ship restored a damaged human body, the idea that aliens could take human form was a stark and scary reality. It was possible that the aliens were steering the committee to that conclusion. The committee suspected that the aliens could use the body they had in the alien craft as a vehicle to enter into the human realm. Perhaps it was a way for them to enter our human world unnoticed. Was one of many questions brought up at committee meetings. The body was like a machine that was on idle. The engine was running, but no one was at the controls. It sat in the incubation room waiting for something or someone to activate its circuits and put it into gear. People under hypnotic suggestion will do things they have no recollection of doing once they come out of the hypnotic state. That notion was the impetus that got one committee member to suggest that it was possible to make the body perform even though it had no conscious mind of its own. That idea opened the door to use ESP, extrasensory perception, as a possible way of controlling the lifeless body they had in the ship. Could the aliens control the body in that manner? Would they need to enter into it, or could they do it remotely somehow? If so, then perhaps they, the scientists, could control the body with the help of psychics and hypnosis. Those were questions the committee tossed around. Their first approach to study that theory was to see if the body would react to psychic thought waves. After several trials, one of the psychics working with the body was able to get the body to move some of its fingers. Unfortunately, that was the extent of his achievements, and they gave up on that project after 6 months of exhaustive testing. The experiment did produce some negative consequences for the scientists. A few weeks after they had stopped those specific experiments, two scientists working near the body reported that the body came to life, as if coming out of a coma. Said one report, according to the testimony, the body got up and danced, and in one instance it turned around and looked right at me, and then it screamed a stream of profanity at me. There was another incident where the body attacked one of the technicians who had taken it out of the craft for a short time during a different experiment. No other details were given. Those who were personally affected by the antics of the body have refused to enter the alien craft since those incidents. One skeptic on the committee attributed what allegedly took place to fatigue by those who made those claims. He told the members that the so-called coming to life of the body could be explained by the fact that the craft affects people in a variety of psychological ways, and altered reality as we humans understand reality. That did not explain the incident that supposedly took place outside their craft, but the committee member reviewing the matter did not believe that incident took place either. Other committee members were convinced that something did happen, but they questioned why the body that hadn't moved for 2 years out of the blue began playing pranks on the scientists. One on the committee believed the claims and attributed the phenomena to the experiments that were performed by the psychics. He postulated that the psychic experiments somehow opened up an opportunity for poltergeist to enter the vacated space in the brain that once housed the spirit of the man whose body it originally belonged to. If psychics are able to have limited success in penetrating and activating the brain, as was shown by the moving fingers, then who was to say a ghost or some other spirit couldn't enter the body too? He told the committee. The committee was divided between those who believed in the possible existence of ghosts and those who thought it was a ludicrous idea. It is bizarre that anyone on the committee could be skeptical of the existence of strange phenomena after witnessing all that they had. Nonetheless, there were those in the committee that were not convinced of the existence of poltergeist. They all agreed that more testing would be done before they made any judgments. After a few weeks of observing the body in and out of the ship, they concluded that the body did, in fact, come under paranormal influences, but only when it was out of the incubator room and off the ship. It was possible that the psychic research had little to do with triggering the ghostly shenanigans as was previously contemplated. There. Researchers were able to move the body to any location by simply taking it by the hand and guiding it to the place they wanted it to go. When the body was left unattended for more than 10 minutes at a time, it simply walked back to the incubator room by itself. If the researcher working with the body was not through with the experiments, all he needed to do was take the body by the hand and guide it back to where the experiment was taking place. The body was completely obedient, for the most part. It was believed by the committee that the eerie yellow glow in the incubator room had something to do with shielding the body from unwanted spirits. After the incidents with the ghosts, they decided to leave the body in the incubator room for several months. They thought that if the poltergeists were indeed attracted by the psychic experiments, in the same way sharks are attracted to blood dropped into the ocean, then removing the body from the unprotected area, outside of the incubator and the ship, might purge whatever remnants of transient poltergeists and ultimately solve the problem. Apparently it worked. There were no more strange behaviors from the body that were reported. Still, no one felt at ease working around the body after those freakish episodes, whether real or imagined. All who came in contact with the body were aware that it was a vehicle that did facilitate the entry into this world. From who knows where? Evil and strange things. The body up until then was never named, it was always referred to as the body, but after those reports it was called Frankenstein. Next headline: biodegradable alien gadgets. It was possible that nothing ever left the ship. One person on the committee offered that hypothesis one day as committee members pondered how the alien craft kept track of its cargo. During extensive testing, they buried alien items hundreds of feet underground. They shot them into space on a one-way trajectory toward Jupiter, no mention on why they sent alien objects towards Jupiter. They encased them in concrete, lead, steel and a host of other alloys. They sank them into the deepest parts of the ocean, and still each and every item reappeared back on board the craft 3 days later. The items that were encased vanished from the material they were put into without a trace or hint that they were ever there. It was as if nothing had been encased at all. The items did not displace the material covering them, no cavities were found. How could it be possible? And of what godly material were the alien items made of that they simply could not be scratched, dented or burned? Even attempts to flatten the items under thousands of pounds of pressure failed. The hydraulic presses were not damaged during the testing, The material simply bounced back as if it were a cartoon character. Ceramic figurines or models were made of some of the alien items. The items that continually changed shape and size, a history of their evolution was attempted.